The following takes place between 6 p.m. and 7 p.m.
Hello, and welcome to Tech Access Weekly, a podcast of unspecified length concerning news and events in accessible technology. This is episode 110 for Wednesday, September 28th, 2011. Six. And as we leave everyone to ponder that, this is Aaron.
And Rodney.
Here with another episode of Tech Access Weekly.
Yes, before our big changes next week.
Yes, exactly. 1st of October. Well, will be really the 4th of October.
5th.
5th. Whatever.
The day after Apple changed the world.
Exactly.
Coming later.
Yes, Apple is having, well, we'll talk about that later, something on October 4th.
We may have to bump it up just because of that.
We may.
We may.
No, everyone can wait.
I don't know if I can, though.
Yes, you can.
I like blabbering about it.
You don't like blabbering about it that much.
It's the only thing I live for. Because we hate people.
That's
true. Might as well blabber about devices because we can't stand
people. We do hate people. That's true.
If we keep saying that, people are really going to believe that.
I know. I know. Well, you're the one who started it.
I know. I start lots of things.
He does. Anyway, we wanted to start out, speaking of starting, we should get this show on the road. We were talking last week about the whole Twitter fiasco.
In a previously recorded week, yes.
And we reached out for comment from the Twitter developers, and although we were not contacted by Q, a couple other developers responded to our questions about how they're going to go on the project.
Via the Twitter support.
Yeah, Twitter support.
At Twitter support.
Tech Access Daily Tip number, whatever it was. 296?
I believe it was, yes.
Yes. Anyway, they responded, and at least two developers said that they were going to continue developing the project as long as they were around and were continuing developing it. Twitter was not going to go away. And, of course, they would still continue support for it. This is sentiment is also echoed on the HLLF blog, and he is one of the developers, and he said the same thing.
What is the dude's name? Is it something like he likes Latin flamingos? No. Maybe that's what we'll call him. He likes Latin flamingos.
Now, don't get people mad.
No.
Don't get people mad.
I think it's funny. If you don't give yourself a name, people have to come up with it. I mean, if my name was He Likes Latin Flamingos, I probably would go by HLLF too.
Yeah. Well. Anyway, we thought we would throw that out there because people seem to think if one developer went down, the whole thing would go down. And in this case, fortunately, he was not the only one. So, if he decides not to continue, because keep in mind this is his third time deciding he's going to close up shop, and he hasn't done it. If he decides to close up shop, then there will be other people to, you know, pick things up.
Well, I guess the real question is will he leave Twitter out there as being completely open source, or will he hold some of the core code for himself, kind of do the Google Android thing? They claim to be open source, but in essence, they really aren't.
Really aren't.
Because there's some things that are just
that's the question.
Close to the vest.
That's the question.
And if the people that are saying that they're going to support it, are they going to actually be able to continue developing it when it?
Well, when the question for me
Twitter
is
changes
when Twitter
the
changes
OAuth stuff,
exactly when Twitter changes the OAuth, are they going to be able to
maintain make those changes and everything, or are they only going to be able to do like minimal modifications to it to sort of keep it running?
That's the
in
big
the
question.
Current state.
That's the big question I have.
I mean, I think probably if they wanted to, they could probably charge for Twitter, you know, charge a license fee.
Charge $10. I mean, I would not.
There's other alternatives out there, but Twitter is pretty much the definitive choice, it seems.
Yeah, it's
like
the most elegant choice.
You know, it's got the most options. There's just not any user interface. That's why I don't use it, because there's not one. I often think of trying to figure out how in the heck to put a user interface on it, but I haven't had time to think of that. Maybe I'll start now. Bye.
Let's move along, dear. Okay. This is
so,
getting...
Is that all we're going to say about the quitter?
Yeah,
I think a lot
much.
Of people are a little bit worried about it because quitter is such a
part of
their life to get along
with.
Yeah,
I mean, it
started
with Jotter and then it just, you know, I wouldn't have started with Twitter unless I hadn't gotten Jotter.
Yeah.
And quitter is based on Jotter. So I actually still have that set of scripts someplace.
But apparently the Twitter website actually does have accessibility
It does, but the problem with that is if your screen reader is like most and uses quick navigation keys like T is for tables and R is for radio buttons, you won't be able to use those shortcut keys.
Yeah.
So that's one of the problems, and that's why one of the problems with using Google apps is that they've got shortcut keys, but the screen reader takes them over and uses them.
Yeah, it's kind of like in Chrome, the Chrome browser. I have a plugin called Shareaholic. And in there, it allows me to set up all kinds of things, Delicious and Pinboard and Twitter and Facebook and all sorts of different things. And I can just hit one key on the keyboard and it'll launch the interface to post to that. The only problem is that it only disables in things like Gmail. So if I'm on a web page or something and I'm trying to type something, sometimes it will just take over and next thing you know, you're trying to post a Delicious, the fact that you're logging into Gmail.
I see.
So it's a little clunky. So I feel your pain.
Yes. Okay. Let us move on.
We did get a slight piece of listener mail.
Yes. We got two pieces of listener mail. One from Brooke, who says that his mother is... getting elderly, suffering from macular degeneration, and he wants to know what the best reading device for her is. He's gotten her into audiobooks, but is there a device that would work well for the magnification? And Rodney suggested the iPad.
Yeah, my initial thought was, okay, she has a Mac, she is a Mac user, but he's finding that he has to do a lot of technical support with that. Probably the easiest thing would be to try and go with a iPad 2. If you can wait, you might want to wait and see what they do about maybe the iPad 3 because it might have a little bit better screen resolution, might make fonts and things a little bit clearer. And the fact that the user interface is so much easier. Plus, you can have VoiceOver, you can have Zoom, and you can actually pick it up and pull it as close as you need to.
User interface is easy for everyone but my parents.
Oh, dear Lord.
That's
her parents,
a whole
her
other
parents
story.
Last week on Thursday purchased a iPad 2. They drove to the store. The guy showed them videos on how to use it.
He set it up, quote unquote.
They got home and they couldn't figure out how to do a dad blame thing with it. Nothing. Could not do anything. The guy apparently did not tell them that they needed to connect it to iTunes. Create an iTunes account, anything like this. Either that or he created them an iTunes account and they just totally glazed over
and didn't tell him how to use it or explain it outright. And so I was trying to take him through the steps of even installing iTunes because I said, do you have iTunes on your computer? What's iTunes? Oh my God.
Yes.
And I don't have the patience. I don't have the patience to sit and explain.
So she comes. So during this phone conversation, she comes out and starts saying, "Well, you need to talk to somebody that really understands it." And I could tell she was coming towards me. I just sort of turned the TV up and ignored her.
It was not fair.
It was fair.
No, it was not.
I have to do enough tech support with my mom and talk her through things for other people that she's trying to help out.
Well, I did not think they would ask to talk to you, and I'm not going to hand them to you unless they ask, and they didn't.
Yeah.
But that's another story.
And that's another story.
Yes. But I was totally amazed that they got an iPad. Now, apparently, they've gotten it set up, and my dad's gotten to play Angry Birds, and he's now addicted to it, according to my mom.
Yeah. But so, they will probably be the only people around that think that Apple...
has crappy customer service.
Mm-hmm. The guy probably had bad hair or something, and
maybe.
They were worried about standing too close or
maybe.
Something. I don't know. Now, on to page 2.
Let's see. Where are we now?
Oh,
the listener
one
mail.
More listener mail.
The listener
page
mail.
Two.
Number two listener mail. Lynn said that she really enjoyed listening to the podcast. She says that she remembered that Sarah Talk on their last pod, not the last one, but the one before last, podcast played a sound that one of the other electric cars is using, not the Leaf, but I believe it was a Toyota was using. And as I recall, it was somewhat similar.
Yeah, I kind of, since we started watching Star Trek, the old 1960s version on Netflix, it sort of sounded like the warp drive or whatever they used for their light speed.
Yeah, they call it the warp drive.
Yeah, so it was like, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. She also said that she was very upset to hear about the woman who had her house bulldozed into the ground. That was a very upsetting story for her, you know, for her to hear.
Yeah. Was for everybody, and yeah. That was definitely a bunch of whack-a-doodles, and I'm glad somebody enjoyed listening to that podcast, because...
Yeah, Brooks said he enjoyed it. He liked our dialogue. Ooh, that podcast was rough.
That was rough. That was one of the bad episodes. Bad, bad, bad. Because when I'm tired, I just constantly ramble, and she just can't get me to focus.
You know what I mean, like now?
Yeah, kinda.
Okay, let's move along.
You sound like you're bored.
I am bored. I want to get this over with. Okay. I'm starving to death. It's almost 8 o'clock.
All right, into security news. My sequel is having a few more problems. MySQL.com, we mentioned a while back, was breached, and it was serving up some malware for people. Well, it's been breached yet again, and now leaves visitors exposed to malware.
Surprise, surprise.
Now, MySQL.com is not the only place that is actually infected with it. Apache.org, Kernel.org, Linux.com seem to be having similar issues with it. If you have up-to-date browsers and operating systems, you should be okay because it's trying to exploit old technology that is no longer safe.
Right, so, and we've been talking about this for a couple weeks now.
Yeah, and it'll redirect you to another web page and automatically try to install software. So if you are on Windows and you're using, say, Vista or Windows 7, please be sure to have on your user access control.
Yeah.
Even though it is greatly annoying. And sometimes it hides and you don't know what in the heck's going on. That even happens to us visual users,
I know.
Too.
So. Well, I know.
Neener, neener.
Yes.
Anyway, okay. There was also a story saying that in the hacker community, MySQL.com was attempting to be sold for $3,000.
Yeah, I saw that too. $3,000?
Yeah,
what?
That was a little funny. So hopefully they'll get that fixed because it is sort of a repository and learning site for people that want to use MySQL.
Yeah, I hope so.
In other news, Mac OS X last week had an issue with malware showing up in PDFs.
Mm.
I guess it was the OS X REVIR.A.
Wasn't sure how to pronounce that.
Issue. Revere A, I guess. Revision A? I don't know.
There were several different ones that kind of had the same...
But this was an exploit that could happen with PDF files. They have actually pushed out a malware detection update that will alert you to the issue.
Apparently, Apple is saying that it will continue to push out regular updates once a week. I think it said once a week. It used to be it only pushed out updates when it updated OS. I think.
Yeah, and they also announced that anyone using anything older than Lion would not be able to get support either for security. So if you're on a PowerPC, which does not, I believe, have accessibility or voiceover, but if you know anyone that's using PowerPC, they were kind of like Windows 2000. They aren't going to get their security updates anymore.
And for those of you thinking that Apple Macintoshes are immune to viruses.
It's like a flashback. Well, actually, there is a Trojan called Flashback for Macintosh that will actually pretend to be the Adobe Flash installer. Intego Security Systems has found this and has pointed it out to Apple. Apple does not seem to be really worried about it. But if you would like to do some security on your own, you can tell your Safari browser to not remember files that you have downloaded and to turn off the settings for opening safe files. I guess there's a setting in there that will actually say...
Open files that it thinks is safe.
This is Adobe. Mm-hmm. I can download it and I can install it. No mm-hmm. problem. Choo-choo. So... Yeah, turn that off. Yeah, I have an article from macworld.com that I'll put in the post for this and that you can also find on delicious.com/techcast/110.
Six.
No six.
Oh, okay.
The big question is, why six?
Yeah, well, we're not going to explain it.
And now there is also a Facebook hoax going around via email claiming that with the F8 changes from last week, they're going to start charging for profile updates.
Oh, my Lord. And people were just going crazy over this and thinking it was true.
The hoax wanted you to copy this from your email and put it into your Facebook wall post, and it was finding hundreds of thousands of people that were actually doing this crazy thing.
Oh my God.
Facebook currently is not planning to charge or will plan to charge for anything like this in the future or immediate future.
Notice how carefully they word that.
Yeah. But this kind of hoax also came around back last year at some point.
Yeah,
which
I
was
remember
2010.
It. Yeah. One other thing, even the smartest of us can fall for these hoaxes, so this is why we point them out. I just fell for one last week.
You know how we always get those little direct messages
that say,
I saw what you did last night, or something like that?
Oh, God, I got one, and I fell for it. It was terrible, terrible, terrible. And I don't think my account sent any out, but I got a message from the person who, because I went to the website, and I thought, okay, I know this person. Maybe this person was talking about this tweet that I posted that was funny, because the message says, I laughed so hard when I saw this. And I thought, okay, she doesn't want to retweet it. She just wants to tell me privately.
That, or maybe it's one of those forwarding systems where you can actually say, refer to this tweet.
Right. So it was like this strange site that said, this site is broken, or it had some kind of like, this site is down at the present moment or something. So I emailed her I tweeted her and said, what was this tweet you sent? And she figured out that her account had been hacked and told me. And of course, I just about strangled myself with self-reproach.
Me, I just laughed.
And he just laughed, which really did not help. But changing the passwords on all my Twitter accounts seems to have helped.
Well, I have to say, I almost got bit 3 times last week myself, where I saw somebody send a link over and it just didn't seem right. So I messaged the person and said, I think your account might have been hacked. You might want to change your password.
Well, at least you didn't chomp on it.
Yeah.
I mean,
well,
you know.
Some of us are sophisticated. Moving right along. Facebook over the weekend was accused by a hacker called Kubrilovich, C-U-B-R-I-L-O-V-I-C. That was my redneck impersonation, or pronunciation, I guess it would be. He found that if people logged out of their Facebook accounts, Facebook was actually still tracking you.
And Facebook had to come up with some sort of explanation as to why this was going on.
Well, first they said they were not doing any such.
Right.
And then an engineer said, well, after further research, yes, we are tracking you, but hey, you can trust us.
We delete those cookies right after they come into our hands.
Yeah.
We scrub them.
Yeah, we scrub them, and they're only really used to protect you when you're trying to log in, to make it a little bit faster and to try and figure out whether or not it's a malicious person trying to log into your Facebook account. Well, Facebook has finally come back saying that, okay, we do track logged out users, but we're actually going to change the way our session and cookies and other cookies behave. Apparently, they have 2 session cookies called A_user and A_XF. And they also have 5 other cookies that are stored on your computer.
XF or XS?
F. X-ray Sierra.
Okay, don't pronounce it with a fake lisp. You can say S.
Yeah, well, even though I say S, it still comes out like that. Mm. The F. F? No. Anyway, they have 5 other session they're not really session cookies, but they're just regular cookies that they store that are DATRLUPL and ACT.
Wow.
Aren't you more excited because you're more enlightened by this? Be still my heart. Now, after our podcast last week, on Thursday, Mark Zuckerberg took the stage in Facebook land in order to have the F8 conference, which some people are calling, it's just fate. Yeah, it's a developers conference. He actually was very polished. People are speculating that maybe he has really worked on his public speaking, public speaking, so that he can kind of take over the exuberance of being the next Steve Jobs.
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of what the speculations were. Among the things that they mentioned, they are going to have a new feature in your profile called Timeline. In this timeline,
they want your life.
Yeah, they pretty much do. Timeline is going to track all the way back to everything you have ever done on Facebook. They even want you to start adding information throughout your entire life.
They want your baby pictures, people.
They want baby pictures.
They want all your little embarrassing moments.
They want little old you laying on the bearskin rug that your mother thought was very funny taking a picture of.
Or putting your hands into your birthday cake when you were two.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
Or thumping your nose or something. Or when you graduated from high school.
They want
and
all
prom
that
pictures
stuff.
And things. They're kind of wanting to create a timeline of your life. Mm. This is the life of you, and we own it. Mm. But anyway, they're going to automatically organize this information and display it. You will have supposedly good security options for this because it is kind of a stalker's paradise.
Woo-wee.
Dude, she's hot now. What'd she look like in high school? You know, I can just hear it now.
I can, too.
They're also going to create what they call a social graph to sort of show where your influence is all over the social network of Facebook. You will be able to control who gets to actually see that. The other major thing is, the one thing that we announced last week was they actually gave you the wall ticker or post ticker that will show activities, which I don't really understand why anybody needs to know that Sarah was looking at Whitney's wall pictures and made a comment. Why do I need to know? But anyway, one thing that they announced during the F8 conference is that they are making deals with companies like RDO, Hulu, Mog, and even Spotify, who is actually requiring people to log in with Facebook on some of their applications, which is kind of griping people. But anyway, if you are actually able to use Spotify or one of these services, you watch or listen to something, it's going to post on your wall that, hey, Sally is watching Bones.
Mm.
And then if you want to, you can actually click on that link and it will start playing it in Hulu with that other person.
Only thing is, you can't use Netflix.
Netflix you cannot use in other countries such as Canada. So you Canadians can just go
I guess it
crazy
is a separate country.
Yeah, I guess. Or somebody thinks it is anyway. Mm-hmm. You'd have to refer to the, what was it, the South Park movie from a few years ago.
Yes.
But anyway, Netflix is exempt from this because of legislation back in the 80s that required video stores not to share your personal rental history. Apparently, there was a public official that was trying to run for office, and the opposing camp got a hold of the person's rental history and published it, thus making it not a good thing because he had all sorts of risque movies.
Arr.
But yeah, that was back in like 1985. So that is kind of hosing it up for Netflix and not allowing them to play in the Facebook world. Now, speaking of playing in Facebook, Firefox 7 is finally out.
Yes, and one of the main things that people have noticed is that it is less efficient when it comes to memory. People were noticing with the previous versions that, especially if you had multiple tabs open.
Oh, it was a hog.
Memory just leaked out everywhere. And for those of us who use screen readers, the issue was even more critical because they use up memory themselves. And so accessibility testers for Firefox 7 have noticed that if it stays open for a longer period of time, running all sorts of tabs, many screen readers are a lot less sluggish when performing with Firefox.
Yeah, you can see possibly anywhere from 20 to a 50% memory usage decrease.
Yeah, it's definitely a hog.
There are also other options in there that will allow for hardware acceleration when rendering in Windows. They will now support, apparently, something called W3C navigation.
Hmm.
Not quite sure what that is. And there will also be an opt-in system for collecting performance data where you can say, hey, I don't want you to really collect any data, but if you want to, you can check out the performance of my browser.
Right.
So you can actually check out that. In something that we mentioned last week during the podcast, because it was just sort of bouncing around, Apple is going to hold their iPhone event on
October 4th.
I believe I've said October 5th during last week's episode, but
it's really the 4th.
It is going to be a small casual affair at the One Infinity Loop on the Cupertino
campus.
Exactly. Current rumors are that the new iPhone is going to have a 1 gigabyte of RAM, which should definitely help out with performance.
Speed.
And speed and stability, possibly. Another big rumor is that they're actually going to have Assistant, the voice-activated
command thing.
Yeah, which I think there is an app currently that's called Assistant.
Yes, it's called Siri.
Yeah.
And it was a Tech Access Daily tip back a long time ago. And Nuance purchased Siri, and Apple purchased Nuance. Thus, Apple now has access to Siri's technology and is integrating it into iOS 5.
Yeah, and other current rumors are that the camera will be an 8-megapixel, better lens, and there could be a 4S and a 5 version allowing for a cheaper model, maybe an 8-gigabyte version for those people who can't quite afford the $100. $200 or $300 price range.
Haha.
Sprint customers who are going to get the actual iPhone this year are finding that Sprint is not playing as nicely as it seemed they used to. So for new and old customers, they have a hotspot data cap now of 5 gigabytes. They're going to still charge $29.95 for 5 gigabytes, which is still probably the best you can get for that much data, and for 5 cents extra per megabyte. So that's pretty good.
Pretty good.
As opposed to charging you like $15 for going over your 200 megs like AT&T will do. Bastards. Always wanting money. It was also confirmed by T-Mobile that they will not get the iPhone, if you haven't heard that.
Yeah, I think we said that last week. But
yeah.
I guess as of last week, it hadn't been quite confirmed yet.
Yeah, it was confirmed by a second person within T-Mobile
This
past week end, I believe it was. Now, on to who started the fire.
Ooh.
Or we're all fired up.
Exactly. Or not.
Or, well, yeah.
Well, over the Amazon.
I would say it's kind of fired people up. Little bit.
Well, it's fired people up in good and bad ways. Some people are saying this is going to be awesome, and some people are really, 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 really angry. And over
so
what,
basically,
you might
they're
ask?
Really apparently angry.
Basically angry.
Yeah.
Over the release of the Amazon Kindle
updates.
Fire.
In New York City today, Amazon held an event, and they are going to have new versions of the Amazon Kindle. There's going to be a wonderful Amazon Kindle Classic, which is going to be a non-touch screen Kindle with keyboard. Kind of looks similar to the old Kindle, but not quite. It's going to have a 10% faster page turn than the Kindle 3, and it's only going to be $79.
Well, $79.
It's going to be $79 for the Wi-Fi model if you get the one that actually has
advertisements.
Which, I mean, I've seen people on Twit and other podcasts say, okay, here's what it is. It's a splash screen when you first turn it on. At the bottom of, say, table of contents pages, you'll have a little banner ad, which you can actually click on if you figure out how to navigate with the buttons.
Mm-hmm.
And that's about it. Once you're actually into the book and reading, it's no big deal. So if you know someone that has been kind of on the fence about the Kindle and not sure whether to get it or not, the ad version is probably going to be perfectly fine. The $79 version will actually ship now. And if you want the no ads version, it is going to be $109 out of your pocket.
Yeah. And the 3G versions are, of course, more expensive.
Well, yeah. You will be able to have a Kindle Touch Wi-Fi version, which will weigh 5.98 ounces. It'll have an infrared screen for touch instead of a capacitive, worrying about your fingers and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It has one button, I believe, and no keyboard. It will range for $99 for the Wi-Fi version, $139 for the non-ad version. There will be a 3G version that will always be connected with a price of $149, and the no ads version being $189.
Yeah.
That is going to apparently ship on November 21st. Now, doesn't sound too bad. I mean, it's the kind of the same old prices, kind of going after the e-ink area, you know, gives you a nice color screen and all that. But their big announcement was the Kindle Fire.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, exactly.
It's
kind of their
answer to the iPad.
Well, it's the Nook, basically. Yeah. For the most part, apparently, it is going to go after the Nook, from what I'm thinking, because it is a 7-inch screen. It is a 1024 by 600 resolution. It has a dual-core processor, which is still kind of up in the air as to how good it is.
Mm.
It's going to weigh about 14 ounces, have 8 gigabytes of storage, and be Wi-Fi only at this point.
Hmm.
It's going to ship on November 15th, and you can pre-order now, and it's only going to cost you $199. It will have access to Audible books, video streaming of 11,000 titles. It is going to be available. The video streaming is available to Prime members, which is no big shock to anyone at this point. But any of these models, you will be able to get a 30-day trial of Prime. Not sure about the $79 version, but apparently the Touch and the Fire versions will actually give you a $79 coupon for that. Another big development is the Amazon Silk browser. It kind of looked a little bit like the Opera browser for mobile devices, but it's going to be different in the fact that it is going to use the EC2 servers at Amazon to store common pages and resources that you consistently use so that your pages are going to load a lot faster, give you a little bit more quick response, that kind of
thing. Is this going to be something you're going to run on the computer or?
It's actually going to work in the cloud.
Where do you? Oh.
It's just the browser on the actual devices.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to store things in the cloud. You'll also be able to store all of your purchased music and things and have access to it on their cloud drives and everything. So that should be a good thing.
Before any of the visually impaired users who are listening start jumping up and down, let's just say right offhand that the Kindle Fire does not appear to have much accessibility built into it at this point.
It's got access to a app store, but it's not the actual Android app store.
No.
It is currently using version 2.3, which is Gingerbread of Android. It has one little funny thing that a couple of people, I think Ricky Inger of Sarah Talk podcast, pointed out today, that the Kindle Classic, the $79 version, does not seem to have text to speech. It doesn't read to you. The earlier ones did not do that. I think they did, based on what the publishers said.
I didn't think when the Kindle first came out that they did that.
Oh, not the early
ones. Not the early ones.
No, I think the most recent ones did. But the $79 Kindle Classic does not seem to have that, but the Touch and Fire do, based on what publishers allow them to do.
But the Fire does not, it has more enhanced functionality, and I think than the Touch does, and I think people are getting irritated because a lot of that is not accessible at this point.
Yeah, and neither are the Touch, and neither is the Classic. As usual, because the crazy menus, they just do not get it in their head that they are going to make it accessible.
Right. But one thing that Amazon has started to do, you can now check out Kindle titles from your local library, provided, of course, you are a, qualified registered library card holder. The libraries will have Kindle titles available for checkout. You just have to go to their website and look for them on their website.
Yeah, and there is a limit to how long you can check them out, and availability is based on how many versions they agreed to have.
Right. It sort of operates similar to OverDrive.
So if they only agreed to have one version, that's the only version that can be checked out.
Yeah, and it'll be, you'll have to wait, be on hold and all this kind of thing. So,
but in the world of accessibility on the Amazon, it was stated on Twitter as well as on the Twit specials by Andy Anatko of the Chicago Sun-Times and MacBreak Weekly and the newly created Anatco Almanac on the 5x5 network that he was greatly disappointed in the fact that accessibility for visually impaired folks has not even started to move at all on the Amazon Kindle platform.
Yeah, so that was, I was very glad that he pointed that out.
Yeah, that was good because, I mean, at that point in time, there was probably about 11,000 people in the chat room and mm-hmm. no telling how many people were watching their coverage live.
Yeah.
On that. But other visually impaired folks were getting in a hubbub.
They were getting angry over it, too.
Angry? Did you say angry?
I did.
Who got angry?
Well, we don't need to name names.
Oh.
There's been a lot of angry, justifiably so, you know, Twitter and blog chatter over it.
Mm-hmm.
So, that was all I was stating.
Oh, that's all you're stating. Mm-hmm. Okay. There will be an article in the show notes and on the post for this called Angry with Amazon for Lack of Accessibility.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say that was posted by Pratik Patel. I'll name names. But everyone is kind of disappointed in Amazon. It's one of those markets that people are just feeling that is not thought
They're
of
not
as valuable.
Responsive, yeah.
You know, and a lot of people on Twitter today were saying that, oh, Amazon needs to be sued because of it. They need legal action in order to make them do anything.
Oh, jeez.
And I think it was Mike Calvo of Ceratech said that, well, actually, it was kind of confusing because he compared the Amazon and legal lawsuits to communism. It's just there, and once people get used to it being there, they just sort of ignore it. So, kind of meaning that legal action just doesn't seem to be carrying much weight anymore
when
it comes
it really
to accessibility
doesn't.
And other issues, which is pretty much true. It's mm-hmm. one of those sue first, ask questions later.
Exactly. And the lawsuits drag out in courts for years and years and years and years, and
nobody gains anything.
No one gains anything, and money just keeps going down the drain. So,
but something needs to be done.
Something needs
to
be done.
I mean, there's lots of products out there that the visual folks are able to use that blind users are just not included in.
Yeah. You know, so. Amazon and Google both have this blind spot, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, it's kind of like the sort of news feed on Facebook. It kind of goes down the right side of the screen and everybody's just going to kind of ignore that right side of the screen. So they're going to create a blind spot based on that.
Let's go with some good, positive accessibility news.
Really?
Yes, absolutely. The LookTel Money Reader that we all know and love, and it was a Tech Access Daily Tip a long time ago.
And it's got lots of accolades.
Yes. One of the big beefs that we all kind of had with it was, why doesn't it support more currency? And that was the most requested feature, I think. Of all, at least from what I saw on Twitter, great, but it only supports U.S. currency. Well, now, with version 2.0 just being released, it now supports U.S. currency, Canadian currency, EU, British pound, and Australian currency.
Woohoo!
Yay!
So, yeah, if you do not know, this is a great little app where you can actually just take the camera of the iPhone and wave it over a
bill
or currency of some sort, and it'll identify what it is.
Mm-hmm.
It does not have to do like other apps and go to the cloud to get the information. It actually has it on the device.
And it's considerably better than that piece of crap the U.S. government put out.
Oh, God. That was horrible.
Oh.
iNote.
Yes.
Yeah. If someone tells you to try iNote, don't bother.
Don't
just
bother.
Say I don't
just,
care.
Just, I mean, and they say, oh, it's free. Pay the $1.99 for LookTel.
Yeah, it's
iNote is beyond terrible.
It is wonderful, and a lot of people are enjoying the access for that. Now, not in so great news, the iOS update to Skype that has just come out is for iOS devices such as the iPod, iPads, and iPhones, which actually has some good new features. It has an image stabilization if you're using a video call, has a couple of security fixes, and it also has Bluetooth headset support, which is really a good thing.
That's nice.
But
however, it broke some things with regard to accessibility. First and foremost, VoiceOver now comes out of the earpiece with this new version of Skype, apparently. So I have been told. Secondly, when you try and dial like as if you are dialing a telephone, someone's phone number. The dial pad appears to be broken.
Broken?
Broken. In other words, non-responsive to voiceover somehow. I haven't actually tested it because I think I've only used Skype on the iPhone like 4 times.
Yeah.
So it's not really a concern for me.
And there's also a problem with getting to your contacts list as well. A few people on Twitter have actually said that if you close Skype and kill it in the task manager, you can actually open it back up and the contacts will be accessible again. No such luck for the dial pad, hopefully.
That will get fixed soon.
It will get fixed with an update. It was kind of funny because people were saying that, oh, Jeff Bishop heard that there's going to be an update coming real quick that'll do a hot fix of this. Then he quickly said, no, I don't. So that was kind of funny. Figured I would point that out.
I missed that one.
Now, there's going to be a book series coming out just for kids with disabilities.
Well, it's geared towards kids with disabilities, but it's also geared towards, kids in general, sort of like how to understand children or friends of theirs that may have some kind of disability. And it's called the Very Special Kids series. And they're basically children's books with drawings and narration and all kinds of other things. Well, I think they're going to be in hard copy, but they're also going to be iOS apps that you can purchase about children who may have special disabilities. The first one that's coming out is about a little boy who has some kind of ADHD disorder. And others are going to come out, you know, that talk about, I think a kid who's suffering from synesthesia, or I guess I wouldn't say suffering from it, but, you know, has it. And another child who's blind. And just, you know, how they perceive the world. And like I said, these are not just hard copy books, but they are digital as well. So they come with very vibrant illustrations and professional audio narration if you're purchasing them as apps.
Uh-huh. Very good. Kids are brutal. They need to learn a little bit in their books.
That's
true.
If they
can read.
Yes, you have to. Well, the apps are narrated, but you still should be able to read.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Now, I guess there's some sort of an awards thing going on across the pond.
Yes, the Vodafone Foundation. These awards, you know, they come out of Brussels, and they're in collaboration with a couple of organizations to bring them out. They are for people who can develop the most versatile and accessible smartphone apps. And these apps focus for people with disabilities. They have to be specifically designed for persons who have various disabilities. The disabilities aren't really important. The categories of the apps are important. There is a category for socialization, for example, apps for people with autism or Asperger's syndrome or something like that. Well-being, apps that improve a disabled person's sense of well-being and overall health. Independence, apps that could make it easier for people to live more independently. And mobility, an app that can assist with mobility, whether it's, you know, finding directions or travel hints if you've got a disability, any of that kind of thing. And so the submissions are going to be, they're from June to, I guess, the middle of October. And we have a link in the Delicious, in our Delicious notes for episode 110 that talks more about this and how to submit your app.
Aha. Uh-huh. And I guess there is a new development, the U.S. Senate that has passed an act.
Yeah, the autism legislation needed to be renewed this year in September. And the U.S. Senate has just approved new legislation. It had been held up in Congress because of the budget concerns. And there was concern that this money that was the government was going to allot for research, education, and further study of autism was, you know, they wanted some accountability, essentially, and that had not been built into the legislation. So, essentially, the legislation allows for $231 each year for the next 3 years, $231 million, to be spent on research, education, and other alternatives related to autism. And several congressmen were successful in getting some accountability measures built in so that there will be frequent reporting on how the money is used.
Mm-hmm.
So, it passed, I guess, at the very last minute by voice vote in the Senate before they took a long, well-deserved, according to them anyway, vacation.
Yeah, right before that, they probably decided to approve a study for figuring out if moss really does grow on the north side of trees. Mm. Sometimes the things that they actually give funding for just dumbfound you with.
Totally crazy.
Yeah. Does fast food make people fat?
Oh, for God's sake.
Just crazy little goofy things. Yeah, I know. But anyway, speaking of
craziness, people in California are getting access to voting electronic voting machines for the first time. Those who are visually impaired are getting access to them, and there was a training conducted by the Braille Institute to show people how to use them. This article was kind of strange, though, because it said that these machines had been available since 2000, and it's 2011, and they're just starting to get used. That was not explained. So I'm a little bit confused. If they've been available, why haven't they been used? Maybe the concept has been around since 2000, but that's not the same thing as being available. So I'm not exactly sure what all that was about.
Yeah, and they wanted to try and save money because printing things in Braille were too expensive.
Absolutely.
And large print was too expensive.
Yeah, oh yeah, and especially I can totally understand that.
The one stat that I enjoyed that I know you certainly will, only about 10% of blind people can actually read Braille.
I knew I'd get you.
Yes.
I mean, hey, blind people can't read Braille. You know, but it's interesting because you'll hear people that are actually visually impaired that actually have, I guess, partial sight, whether you're partial or squint or whatever in the heck they want to call it these days, actually say that they wish they had learned to do Braille because they would have been able to have been reading and actually have eye contact with people.
Yeah. I understand if you lost your vision and you're an adult, you learned how to, don't get me going. You learned how to read print first. Reading is what counts here, not, anyway, I'm going
to
stop now.
Well, and back in the day, it was always said that, okay, you needed to learn, you needed to use what you have. Don't worry about doing Braille. That was what I was always told.
I agree with that. I think you should use what you have.
You know.
I believe that.
It would probably be a lot better if I had learned that way back when, because it would probably help me these days with keeping up with things. But, hey, I don't know. All I know is my fingers aren't quite sensitive enough to keep track of those little dots.
Well, you also have a problem because your fingers are not small.
What are you saying? I have fat fingers?
Yes. Mr. I can't wear our wedding ring anymore.
Well, yeah.
That's kind of sad.
Hey, my high school ring size was a 13. And by the time I got out of college, it was an 11. I lost two ring sizes.
That's scary.
It is a little bit scary.
And my fat, pudgy fingers.
Anyway,
BMW.
Now that we have just aired our personal business all over the internets.
Who the hell's listening? I mean, heck.
Yeah, BMW is going to be adding Nuance voices to its iDrive system that's going to be put into its cars. I guess similar to the Ford Sync, you're going to be able to use your iPhone as it's plugged in to read your email and Facebook and do all these things by voice command. And it's going to use the Nuance voices to read your emails and Facebook and whatever. And they've got currently, I think, 14 languages are supported. English, of course, and a bunch of others.
Now, we basically mentioned this because any time that text-to-speech is being used in mainstream, that sort of means that the technology will probably get a little bit better.
Yes, absolutely.
So here's hoping that Be My Worry Cars, BMW, will actually improve Nuance.
Yay!
Especially when that iPhone gets here.
Yay!
Next week.
Oof, I want October iOS 5. 4th. The Nuance sounds so much, the voices sound so much better.
Yeah. Well, you got Lexipedia.
That has the crappy, that voice is even crappier than iOS 4's voice.
I know, but you got a love affair going with that little thing right now.
Well, that's true.
Plex Talk Pocket, if anybody hasn't figured it out.
Yes.
Now, anyway, there is going to be a virtual job fair coming up.
Yes, the National Council on Disability is organizing this virtual job fair, and we have an article on the Delicious website that tells you how to post your job opportunity. This job fair is going to be emphasizing nonprofits and governmental and advocacy agencies. But of course, I think anyone can submit an employment opportunity if you have a job opening and you are considering hiring people with disabilities. You can submit your job opportunity to this website, and the job fair will be on October 4th, I do believe. And it will be conducted through Facebook and Twitter. The Twitter user ID to follow to keep in touch is NatCownDis. Can I have
what?
A stranger name? Capital N-A-T, capital C-O-U-N, capital D-I-S. NatCownDis. And, of course, the National Council on Disability is ncd.org, I do believe.
NetCountDis.
Yes.
I mean, I've heard of names being missed before, but...
Remember, I was talking about it earlier because I said, what kind of a crazy Twitter name is this?
Yeah. I would have tried to come up with something. Something. Got to be something.
I think a group of graduate students, along with this company, are coming up with a certain other company. I can't remember the name. It escapes me right now. Are coming up with a design for a folding wheel. This, of course, would be attached to a wheelchair, and it would enable a wheelchair to be stored in a much more compact state. And you looked at the wheel, and it looked like it folded up in the middle?
Yeah, it kind of collapses in the middle so that it's sort of two rounded ends, and it sort of meets in the middle, kind of like a bow tie.
So
it goes pretty flat when you look at the seat and everything.
Yeah, and people are very excited about this because wheelchairs can now be stored in cars, and they can be now probably put in airplane cabins instead of in the baggage compartment because the wheels will be able to fold up at, you know, really small. Now, this is not being rolled out on any manufactured models at this point. It is still a concept in design, and I try not to go into too many concept designs, but this one was just kind of cool, and I thought I'd share. It seems like something that could actually be developed soon, so I thought I would share it.
Yeah, it kind of makes you wonder, though, how sturdy it would be if it is able to be folding
if
like
that. If it folds
that.
In the middle, you kind of wonder about the stability. That's true.
But it probably would end up working. Definitely would be good for someone that's using maybe needing to travel a lot, you know, as far as storing it in the back of their car or something like that.
Or on airplanes.
Because they are kind of bulky.
Oh, yeah. And heavy, definitely. Sort of a bridge, an accessibility / non-accessibility story. Delicious has revamped itself and come out with some new features. Delicious, the bookmarking site that we use for our stories.
Yes.
One of the main new features is called Stacks. And I tweeted a link to a YouTube video that shows a demonstration of how they work. It's pretty visual. But essentially, Delicious is calling it Playlists for the Web. Essentially, you can take a topic of your choice, find websites, videos, and other cool links about it, and put them in a stack for other people to see and share on Delicious. And so that's an interesting new feature. Now, one accessibility grumble that I have with this is that when I go to view links on the Delicious website, I only see the first 10 links. And usually, it has little numbers like page 1, page 2, page 3, page 4, and next. They are no longer visible to JAWS. I have not tried this yet with System Access or NVDA to see if it's accessible to them. But JAWS doesn't see them. Now, somehow, I got Delicious to display all the links. But I don't know how I did it, and I can't make it do it again. So, at this point, I'm limited to the first 10 links.
Yeah, that's not too good.
I'm going to have to see if I can figure it out. And work with it a little bit, but the toolbar is better.
Yeah, we've been trying to come up with a way to do the workflow that we do for the show a little bit better. So if people have suggestions, I mean, we kind of like Delicious because there's a plug-in. You can easily click and just go right to it.
Just with a couple of keystrokes.
We've kind of played a little bit around with Pinboard, but really haven't tested it out that great because it's been kind of a flaky system as far as when it picks things up. So if anybody's got any suggestions other than just copy the link and email it to yourself, greatly appreciate
that. Yeah, because we deal with tons of stories at a time.
Yeah. And I do want to mention something that I just realized in email that I had forgotten to do last week and figured I better get it in here. We had an email from Brian Fischler, F-I-S-C-H-L-E-R. He apparently is a stand-up comedian that has been on things like the Today Show and Top Gear here in the U.S. He performs all over the country. They are coming out with a Laugh for Sight benefit on October 3rd in New York City. If you want more details, you can go to Laugh for Sight, LaughForSight.com, or you can visit, let's see, what is the website? GothamComedyClub.com, GothamComedyClub.com. And you can find out more information about it. Apparently, they are going to have some comedy bigwigs, such as Robert Klein and Stephen Wright, who I remember from way back in the day.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so they're going to have them. It is going to be on October
3rd
And let's see, does it say? You can get the information on the website, but I thought I would mention that.
Yeah, because we forgot last time. Yeah, we forgot. Brian. Yeah, I apologize.
We were going to get some more information out about that, but what I will do is I will post this information. Actually, I'll just post his email in our page notes for this episode so that you can get all the information from right there.
One last thing that does not relate in the least to what we were just talking about.
Well, I just thought of that, and I figured I better get it in there.
Oh, I know, because we would forget, and we don't want to do that.
If we put it at the very end, we know people have probably stopped listening.
Tuned us out by then. Google has begun the process of digitizing some of the Dead Sea Scrolls. Ooh. So they are no longer available for just a few scientists to look at. They'll be put up on the web for the public to view. So that should be kind of interesting.
Yeah, I don't know whether they're actually going to be the text of it or whether they are images.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure.
It kind of looked like images of it to me when I was looking at one of the press releases for Google. But, I mean, can't be in English.
No, it's probably in Hebrew or cuneiform or whatever language they're written in. I don't remember.
Yeah.
So. Anyway.
That is a good thing, because only about 4 or 5 scientists and archaeologists per year ever get to look at those things. Oof. Because of the age and decay that they go through. Yeah.
So this is good, especially for scientific research.
Very much so.
Interesting. Nah. What were you
thinking? Oh, you skipped to some guy.
No, this is a strange story.
Oh.
This is a strange story, so it goes in with the strange. We don't have really what were you thinkings, but we do have a few strangenesses to share.
Yeah.
Some dude, or the article says some guy, has, over the past 15 years, sent out 4,800 messages in bottles into the Atlantic Ocean, and he has gotten over 3,000 responses back from all over the world.
If I spend time in a bottle.
This is Jules Verne to the extreme.
Or Jim Croce.
Well, Jules Verne had the story, the several books that were premised on the fact that people were sending messages in bottles.
Yeah.
And it was very strange. Anyway.
I see.
Yeah, several books, and they were like this loosely bound series and similar characters and everything. And whenever one character needed help, he would send a message in a bottle, and then 7 years later, in the next book, the character, other character, would get the message in the bottle. They were interesting books. Anyway, so he has sent 4,800 messages in bottles. He has gotten 3,100 responses from all over the world, and he does not give out his telephone information, just his address, regular mailing address, so that the only way that he will be able to be answered is by letter. He wants to keep this down to the basics. I think that is so cool.
Well, yeah, and then he gets to collect all of the postmarks.
Exactly. He's gotten things from, like, England and Africa and, oh gosh, all over the place. So I just thought that was neat, and I thought we should include it.
You know, he could just become a ham operator.
That's true.
If he was a ham radio operator, anybody that you contact usually will send out like a QSL card, I believe they call it.
But it's the whole bottle thing.
Yeah,
in the whole water, bottle thing. The randomness of the currents and everything.
My luck, I could throw 20 of them out there and they'd come right back to me.
And apparently he uses Ocean Spray cranberry juice containers.
Huh, I wonder what flavor.
Well, I don't know.
Okay, we're digressing.
Anyway, which one was next?
Oh. I guess there was some sort of a crazy combustion.
Yes. A man spontaneously combusted.
Supposedly.
What is this, Stephen King? He was in his house in Ireland, and not that the country makes any difference, but this happened in Galway, Ireland. And people went in and found him sitting in front of a fire, totally burned and, you know, type of thing. The fire was, I guess, going merrily along, so nothing was going on with the fire, and the only things burned were the floor underneath him and the ceiling above him, I guess. The only things that showed traces of burn in them. What is this, a Stephen King novel?
My initial question was he in the sunlight?
I don't think so. He was in the house.
You know, like a vampire, yes, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, angel, something like that.
So, anyway.
I go old school. I don't go Twilight.
Oh. And with that,
we'll say that there is a little bit of sad news today, or this past week.
Yeah.
In 1964,
a San Diego man
named Arch West, yeah,
figured out how to make triangular snack foods that were cheesy and crunchy.
And stained your clothes.
Exactly.
This was the
Dorito.
Favorite snack of all time, the Dorito. Doritos. Now,
it's been so many years since I had Doritos. Yes. If I had them, I would never. I can control myself with potato chips. I can sort of force myself, okay, little bag. Doritos, no.
Anyway, he died last week at the age of 97.
Yep.
Sad news.
Yep.
And he was cremated, and his family has decided that they are going to throw Doritos into his grave, along with the urn. So they're going to essentially bathe it in Doritos and bury it.
That fits right in there with the Pringles guy.
No, he wanted it that way, though. That's what's strange about that one.
Yeah, but the Pringles guy, he wanted to be buried in a Pringles can.
I know. He wanted it that way. But that's
I think the Doritos guy wanted to be buried with his Doritos.
Well, maybe he did. I think he
was actually wanting that.
Yeah, somehow ashes in a Pringles can is much more disturbing than just throwing the Doritos on top of the urn.
Yeah, where do you get a can that big? Do they use ashes, multiple flavors?
Dear, ashes are very, they don't take up much space.
Oh. Well, usually on television when they show like an urn or something and it gets knocked over or something, there's like a buttload of ashes in there.
Like a massive amount,
or something, like in Meet the Parents when the guy shot the...
Yeah, I don't want to think about it. Ugh.
Cork of champagne.
Yes. I don't want to think about it, like I said.
But anyway, this not really basically apparently episode that you have been listening
episode
to.
Episode 6.
Yeah, episode 6, which I guess we should sort of explain that. You came up with the brilliant idea, which we had sort of discussed last week to ourselves, that it's a binary episode, 0110. And if you convert that in binary, it means the number 6.
And next week will be episode 7?
Episode 111, which is also the special changes.
111.
And 0111 will actually be the number 5.
And we will not have another binary episode until episode 1000, at which point we will probably be dead.
Yeah, because we will probably be killed each other.
Probably.
In a rage.
Fiery, blind rage. Do you realize that's almost 20 years from now?
Egad.
18 years from now, something like that. 19. Oh, my God.
And by that point, the same number of people will be listening.
No, it's even more years from now than that. Oh, I don't even want to think about it.
Thousands. Well, it'd be like 6 years, wouldn't it?
No, more than that.
Well, no, we're doing weekly, so yeah. We'd have to go daily in order to get anything.
We say 50 episodes a year, that's 20 years, so it'd be about 18 years from now.
Dude!
I don't know that I can even live with you for that long, much less retain this podcast for that long.
You'll be living in the garage by then.
I'll probably be in hell by then.
Probably! On that note, you have been listening to Tech Access Weekly, episode
110,
which is episode 6 in binary.
To get a list of the stories covered in this episode, you already know this because we've said it about 5 times, but I'll say it again. Go to delicious.com/techaccess/110. And if you'd like to listen to The Melting Pot on Mushroom FM at 7 p.m. Eastern on Sundays, I would really love to have you.
Yes.
MushroomFM.com/meltingpot.
And you can also send in song requests to Aaron@MushroomFM.com.
Or you can tweet Melting Pot Show.
Yes.
Not Melting Pot Shows, Terry and Tracy Clasper. Stop doing that.
Do they keep doing that?
Yes.
Oh.
And now Katie has started doing it.
Oh, jeez.
So stop it.
It's not going to show up.
It will not show up.
Actually, it'll show up on my Twitter because I have a sort.
Yeah,
I had a search going on. Yeah.
Well, since I follow them, I'll see it, but it's not going to show up in my mentions. Show up.
Yeah.
Anyway, at this point, we will simply say...
See, you distracted us that time, took us down a total rat hole.
Yeah, but only for 30 seconds, not like you for 5 minutes last week.
Mm, my bad.
Hopefully,
this episode was a little bit better, and I'll simply sign off by saying bye-bye.
To contact the team for Tech Access Weekly, send an email to techaccessweekly@gmail.com. You may follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/TA_weekly. You may comment on our voice line at 260 2ASK-TAW, 260-227-5829. To find a list of the stories covered in each episode, please visit delicious.com/techaccess. Feel free to visit our website at techaccessweekly.com.